Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Morning, Shawnee.
Good morning, Uncle Dean.
Morning, Andy.
Morning, Dean.
Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Shawnee. We're all in our places with bright, shiny faces.
What is we, like the Waltons?
Apparently so.
Good night, John boy. I just saying hello.
Well, we're saying hello,
Andy
back.
Looks. Andy's got a haircut.
Yeah, got a nice little anticipating the summer dew.
Yeah, it's nice.
Very low maintenance, which is really very up my alley.
Clean cut.
Thank you.
Unlike Shawnee and me that look like hippies.
Well,
if I had hair, it would look like a hippie.
The times, they are a-changing.
The times, they are a-changing. Hey, do you have David Hochberg's phone number by any chance?
No.
I don't either.
I want to call him.
I know.
I want to call him. It's not uncommon for food to be left out here on in the kitchen area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody gets a pizza or something, you know, they'll put a couple of whatever's left over, they'll put it out there. I have never seen anything more disgusting than what is in our lunchroom right now, which is a giant paella pan. I assume it's like a half-eaten pan of paella. I'm told has been out there since yesterday, just sitting out since yesterday. And there's a note next to it saying something like, clean the pan and put it on my desk, David Hochberg. It's disgusting. I want to call him.
Well, we probably can come up with
his phone number.
Yeah, I don't. Might not have it handy. Maybe your producer might have it handy. Oh.
Disgusting. I'm told now I'm getting all this.
You want, well, there's plenty left over. You want me to heat up a plate for you?
Yeah, in case I, you know, I've been thinking today, what would I like to do today? Maybe get salmonella. That would be fantastic. That, first of all, it's a giant pan. It looks like somebody already ate the paella and put it in the pan.
That's a nice
it's like a truck tire.
Am I lying?
No, it's like a truck tire.
It looks disgusting.
Big, yeah. It's big. It's
disgusting. And then the note that says, somebody should clean my pan for me when you're done. Like anybody's going to eat that mess. It's gross. It's gross and not the first thing I wanted to see when I was walking in.
Boy, it's such a beautiful morning outside.
Did somebody tell me that it's rabbit paella on top of it?
That's what I was to understand, yes.
Boy, the sun is out. Andy, isn't it a gorgeous morning?
It is a beautiful morning.
I'm going to go to some of the garbage cans around the building and take a bunch of garbage and just put it on the counter and leave it there.
We could almost hit 80 degrees in some places.
And then I'm going to put a note that says, when you're done looking at my garbage, clean it up.
Did you see the sunrise this morning, Andy?
I did. The Masters is on as well.
Oh, my. Spring is here.
Grossed out.
What are you hearing from the other room in there?
Seriously. We've had some gross things back at, like, the people leave out. You know, there'll be, like, day-old sweet rolls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like an empty pizza.
2 or 3 day-old pizza.
And that, well, sometimes. But, I mean, the pizza, you know, is eaten usually pretty quickly. But they leave the pizza boxes for some reason. Somebody thinks that
they take the last piece and then just leave the box.
Leave the box. But never has anybody left this is a gigantic paella pan with, like, disgusting paella rabbit, apparently. Yeah. Does this song accurately reflect what I was feeling outside when I stepped out my door this morning? Summer breeze makes me feel fine. Blowing through the jasmine in my mind, whatever that means.
I was trying to convey a positive attitude here, and all you could do was complain.
Talk about the blech that's in the lunchroom. Really, all I need is a slight shove to spend the entire show talking about this, and I'm going to try not to. But it truly is. I'm going to post a picture of it on my social media because it's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen left out for others to have to endure in a workplace.
I do like your choice of songs, though.
Right?
In regards to the weather.
It's a gorgeous day.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. Nice day today. And it's going to, I think I heard you say, I was still reeling from the from the trauma that I had walking into the studio today.
We should carry in the pan into the control room, and then you can take the picture.
I already have a picture of
it.
Oh,
you do?
Yeah, and the note that David Hochberg left on it that said, somebody else clean this mess up.
Now, what did you think you heard me say?
That it was going to be nice for several days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're looking for a high near 80 away from the lake today.
I see.
A bit cooler tomorrow, but 70 inland. Temperatures, upper 60s, 70s. May see some thunderstorms on Tuesday.
Yeah.
But definitely moving in the right direction weather-wise.
I may break out my shorts today.
Oh, there. And then put picture of that right next to the paella pan on your social media.
Let me tell you something. It would be more attractive than that pan of... I'm no model, but it would be far 1,000 times more attractive than what's on the table out there. I had my first iced coffee of the season today.
Oh, nice.
Decided, it was just so nice. I had the windows rolled down.
Yeah, the sunroof open as I was driving in.
Yeah. It's just like such a... What a difference it makes, right?
It changes everything.
It changes your entire...
Changes everything.
Demeanor when it's gorgeous outside and you feel that beautiful breeze in your face and the sunshine and sipping
sipping
my iced coffee.
You are now, this is talk about a contrast here. 10 minutes ago, you were off complaining, and now you're sunshine and cheeriness.
Well, I'm,
blue sky.
I'm a glass half full kind of person, mm-hmm. I'm not one to complain about things.
Oh, never. Never.
And then I walk in.
And bam. Post-paella traumatic syndrome.
You are going to post that picture then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
And I think we're going to call David Hochberg, see how he plans on cleaning up the mess that he left. I like to say to myself sometimes when I'm at a fork in the road, what would Bob Collins do?
Ah, yes.
Not that I'm comparing myself to the great Bob Collins, but what would Bob Collins do if he walked into WGN
and saw that?
And found that roadkill that was left in the... in the lunchroom. What would he do? He would spend the entire...
I think he would be talking about it on the air.
He would spend the entire show on it.
He would talk about it on the air, yes.
Yeah. But we've got other things to do today. We've got bigger rabbits to fry on the show today.
Hoss and Pfeffer Central.
Hoss and Pfeffer Central. It's the new David Hochberg show on WGN. Call for a mortgage and a Hoss and Pfeffer. We've got Michael Douglas, 2-time Academy Award winner, Michael Douglas on the show today, talking about his new series about Benjamin Franklin, which he plays Benjamin Franklin. That's going to be pretty interesting, I think. And also 16-time Grammy winner David Foster, talking about a show that he's got coming up in the Chicago area in the next couple of weeks. I talked with Jason Alexander the other day, on Friday. George Costanza.
Oh, yeah.
He's here for a production coming up, isn't he?
Yeah, at the Shakespeare Theater.
Chicago Shakespeare Theater.
He's in a world premiere comedy called Judgment Day. that opens in a couple of weeks, something like that. But I sat down and had a fantastic conversation with him. We're going to share all of that both here and on the TV morning show. So we've got some nice things coming up here today.
Do you want to bring it full circle with Jason Alexander?
What do you mean?
Well, in Seinfeld, when the Seinfelds visited from Florida, George's mom
made paella.
What am I going to do with all this paella?
There you go. Full circle moment.
Yeah. I know what I'd like to do with that paella that's in there right now. I got the number one suggestion right on the tip of my tongue. But
that's... So ask Jason about the paella.
Yeah. Well, I already talked to him already, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but let's move on. Let's move on to happier things. I just learned on Friday also that I was invited to come and moderate the evening with Phil Rosenthal at the Chicago Theater. That's coming up on May the 4th. Phil Rosenthal is the former executive producer of Everybody Loves Raymond. He started his own PBS show where he would go around and, you know, just try foods in different places. It was kind of a food travelogue show. And now he's got a very successful show that's now on Netflix called Somebody Feed Phil. And he's just written a book about his culinary experiences, and he's traveling around the country talking about the book, but he's doing evenings with Phil Rosenthal. Ours is going to be at the Chicago Theater on May the 4th, and they asked me to come and do the Q&A with them.
That's great.
Very cool. To moderate.
That's great.
Talk with them. So
you take questions from the audience also during
those. I will.
Those.
Yeah. Do you have a question for me?
Not yet. I'll come up with something. Okay. Ask him if he likes paella.
Here we go.
Yeah. What would you do with
what would you do
pan?
With half a pan of paella?
Yeah, would you leave it out for your
that
coworkers?
That was been left out for the last 22 and a half hours now.
Happy you left it out for us now, David Hochberg. So anyway, he's a hilarious guy, and it's such a wonderful man. I've interviewed him many times, both with just Everybody Loves Raymond and several times since he started this new career, really, as an on-air personality, doing these culinary and travel shows. I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope, you know, if you're a fan of his show, his books, of cooking, of foods from around the world, I think you'll enjoy this night, so I hope you can come and join us. It's going to be May 4th, Chicago Theater, Phil Rosenthal. Looking forward to that. So we'll get to our far-flung forecast also in a minute, which I'm praying has nothing to do with any rice-based Spanish foods.
Not at all.
coming up next. Nine 27 is the time. Welcome to the happiest place on earth, WGN Radio. WGN Radio, where it's time for the far-flung forecast, our weekly compendium of fascinating facts and information.
That has nothing to do with food today.
That has nothing to do with food. Here with the latest, Señor David Deschuan.
Buenos dias, and good morning, everyone. Thank you, Dean. And everyone, please get out your protractors and compasses and your newfangled devices. We're headed to Michigan today, very, very close to Detroit. We're going to Highland Park, Michigan.
Mm. We have a Highland Park here, too.
We have a Highland Park in Illinois, obviously, yes. Yeah. We have a Highland Park.
I bet ours is better than theirs.
Population-wise, it's larger than the one in Michigan. There's only 8,977 people there.
They shouldn't even call themselves Highland Park. They can't even hold a candle to our Highland Park.
Well, it goes back over 200 years, and in 1907,
A man by the name of Henry Ford purchased some land there and started building a small automobile plant.
I know that name, Henry Ford.
Henry Ford? Yes. Well, you know this name, too, because Highland Park is also the hometown and birthplace of a gentleman by the name of Bill Haley.
Oh, my goodness.
Who formed a rock and roll group called Bill Haley and the Comets 70 years ago last Friday.
You know what would be great if that group put a song out that started sort of a musical genre that has thrived ever since then.
Well, boy, oh boy, Dean, you have just read my mind because it was 70 years ago Friday that they recorded this.
Uh-oh.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock.
Yeah.
9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around 10 o'clock tonight. Put your glad rags on.
I wish you all could see Schwanee dancing in there right now. It's a shame that only Andy and I can enjoy it.
Actually, what's interesting about this song is that it was the B-side, or what we used to call the flip side, of a song that they were going to try to make it into a hit called, what was it called? Dave.
What's the flip side of a record mean, Uncle Dean?
It was supposed to be something like 13 Women and One Man in Town.
What?
Yes. 13 Women and the Only Man in Town and One Man in Town
what
was originally
kind of a record
the
A was that,
side.
13 women.
I know, and it went nowhere.
What kind of debauchery is that?
Also, Rock Around the Clock became the theme song for a movie in 1955 called Blackboard Jungle.
Right.
And Happy Days.
And Happy Days.
That's how I knew that
TV
song,
show, Happy Days, sure.
Yep. But you're right. It was very, very important in starting out the movement known that we know as rock and roll.
Yeah.
And in
a 45 record, Uncle Dean? What's a record?
What's a record? They call it vinyl now.
What's vinyl?
They call it vinyl. Highland Park, Michigan is...
Can I get that on Spotify?
Yes, you can.
Uncle Dean.
Can I continue now?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Highland Park, Michigan has sunny skies and 66 today.
Time for the Weekend Health. Dr. Jeremy Silver joining us. Director of Emergency Medicine, Northwestern Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Silver, hoping it is just as beautiful where you are as it is where we are.
I hope they let you out of the chair today because it's beautiful outside.
Yeah, I can't wait to get outside and enjoy some outdoor time. What we were just talking about, how, you know, what a big difference it makes in one's demeanor, in, you know, your mood when there's some nice sunshine and some nice weather. Is that the effects of the vitamin D that we're getting from the sunshine that makes us feel so good?
I think that's probably a big part of it. I think most people know at this point that seasonal depression is linked to the lack of sunlight, relatively speaking, compared to, you know, what we see in the summertime. So I'm just glad that the sun is shining and it's warm outside.
Yeah, super, super, super nice. It'll make you feel great when you get outside today. A bunch of topics, but I want to just, you know, mention the phone number right at the top here. People have questions for Dr. Silver. You know, people would like to call in on our phone line. It's 312-981-7200. If you'd like to text in a question, 312-981-7200. And we'll be happy to get to your calls and comments in just a minute. You know, we haven't talked about COVID or vaccinations or anything for really quite a while now. Is there anything new on that front? Is there anything that people should be aware of?
No, I think, you know, the COVID cases are dropping. Certainly in our neck of the woods, we're seeing less and less hospitalizations. Deaths are dropping, down 8%, emergency department visits, down 15%. So, you know, I think starting to see maybe a little seasonal variation to this, virus, and, we'll take it for sure.
Yeah, very definitely. So, you know, so that's good. Now, what kind of, where should we be with our vaccinations right now? Should we, you know, because we've always talked about how COVID is going to be something which is always around, may not be fatal the way that it once was at the beginning of the pandemic, but we should be up to date with COVID vaccines, flu vaccines. What else in terms of vaccines? What else should we be doing with all that?
Yeah, so the recommendations for COVID specifically are people over 50 and those with chronic medical conditions like asthma, high blood pressure, diabetes, et cetera. There's a new booster that's available, and they're recommending that those at-risk groups are boosted. Flu vaccine is a yearly vaccine, and it's never, by the way, it's never too late. So, you know, even though we're kind of coming out of the respiratory viral season, there still is flu, and particularly in the elderly, people are still getting sick and dying from flu, not to forget about it. So anytime that if you realize, hey, I never got my flu vaccine this year, now's a great time to go and get it. You certainly won't be waiting in line for it.
Yeah, and I've heard, you know, from so many people about vaccines for other things as well. What is the vaccine that you get for the painful, very painful virus that people are getting? It's eluding me right now. Do you know what I'm talking about?
You're talking about the shingles vaccine.
Shingles vaccine. Yes. Anyone who has had shingles will tell you, for God's sake, go get your shingles vaccine. Because it's so incredibly painful. That's something that's recommended. And pneumonia, right? Shots people should routinely be getting, right?
Yeah, so for the shingles, you know, adults 50 and older, it's recommended. And like you say, you know, shingles can be extremely painful, and there's, you know, other complications for shingles that are unfavorable, let's say. So definitely a good idea. I'd recommend it for just about anybody. And then the pneumococcal vaccine, or the pneumonia vaccine, for adults greater than or equal to 65 years old.
Yeah.
So bottom line is that there are great vaccines out there to prevent you from getting sick. From these are preventable illnesses, right? So get after it and talk to your doctor.
Yeah, there was a story that came out this week about potential health risks for a certain processed food, something that you might throw in your kid's lunchbox because it's easy. It seems like a fairly balanced lunch, I guess. It's, you know, some lunch meat, it's some crackers, sometimes there are some cookies, but there are some health risks that are involved in all of that. Is that a good thing, really, to be packing away for, you know, your kids? And generally, what is the safety of processed foods and fast foods, which seems to be more and more what America is leaning toward?
Yeah, and first of all, let me say, as the father of young children, I get it. It's so much easier to just throw a frozen pizza in the oven and be done with it than to, you know, at the end of the day, and you've been working and tired, and your kids are complaining, and now you have to go to the grocery store and get vegetables and then force them to eat them. It's an uphill battle.
So I
understand, and I'm not condemning, but it's the evidence is clear, and we're talking about things like Lunchables, right? Just to pick one out of the hat,
right?
And the issue is that these foods are very high in salt and sugar, and hence why the kiddies like them, because they're designed to kind of tickle that part of the brain that likes those types of foods. They're also high in additives, things like BHA and dyes and MSG, which can affect brain chemistry. There's high fructose, which the body does not metabolize easily. And all of these chemicals, without, you know, making a laundry list of them, can lead to early childhood obesity, which is linked to diabetes, where they can directly lead to diabetes through the high sugar content. And then there's the cancer risk. So, you know, I think it's so clear that this is not the type of food that really any of us should be eating, and most of all children who are so much more sensitive to the effects.
Yeah, and really, I mean, when it comes to packing a kid's lunch, I mean, a PB&J probably is that. I mean, how hard is that to make a PB&J for your kid? Or, I mean, You know, I was going to say, you know, you make a turkey sandwich or something like that, but the processed turkey is just about as bad as some of the other, I mean, high in sodium and sugar and all the things that you just pointed out. But, you know, go and get yourself a turkey breast and roast it and then just slice it is 100 times more healthy. And, you know, how easy can it be to put a couple of slices of freshly roasted turkey on a couple of pieces of bread and send your kids to school with that for lunch?
Well, I think it's mindfulness. And I think also what I would say to people who would push back and say, come on, man, I just don't have the time. And I would say, do you have the time to be teaching your kid how to give themselves insulin shots? Mm. Do you have the time to deal with high blood pressure in a teenager? And do you have the time to be going to appointments for chemotherapy when their child develops cancer in 20 years? So I think that's the way that we try and think about it in our house. And you're absolutely right. Peanut butter and jelly. We get the sliced turkey from the deli that just comes right off the turkey. And that's kind of how we roll here in our house.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, there are plenty of alternatives. Dr. Silver, a text pointing out something very important that we should bring up. So we're talking about, you know, taking a peanut butter and jelly sandwich to school. 847 area code says, I don't think you can bring peanut butter into your school lunches anymore. I hadn't thought about that. But with peanut allergies, I guess it is prohibited in some schools, I guess, or maybe all schools. I don't know.
Yes, that texture is right on the money. We certainly feed buckets of peanut butter and jelly to our kids, but you're right. We're not allowed to send it to school with them. So we do the turkey and cheese on the school days.
Yeah. Okay. So there's something to keep in mind that at home it's probably okay. If your kids don't have peanut allergies, at school it is not. Somebody very hilariously texts in from the 217 area code. Ask the doctor about safety guidelines regarding food left out in a lunchroom, which happened here at WGN this morning. There's a disgusting mess in our lunchroom that's been out for 24 hours. That's like super unsafe, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the old, I had some mayonnaise at the buffet and I thought it was safe. And then you end up with Montezuma's Revenge.
Yeah, well, that's apparently what somebody was not thinking about when they left this big pile of mess that's out there right now. 847 area code. How long does the immunity stay with the person if they had COVID? So if somebody has COVID and then they are immune, how long does that last?
Yeah, the thought is that it wanes fairly quickly, that it drops over 4 to 6 months. Now, it varies across groups. So they know for sure that elderly people's immunity wanes much more quickly than a younger person. These are of course estimates based on research. None of it's hard and fast, but I think it's pretty clear that every 6 to 12 months. You're not as strong from an immune standpoint as you were the previous period.
Yeah, there's been so much talk about measles cases developing here in Chicago, although I think I read this week that in the city proper, cases of measles had now declined. But I did read that the first case of measles popped up in DuPage County, so apparently we're not done dealing with this yet. But the 815 area code texts in, I travel a lot. I'm 67. I never had measles. I had to push a bit, but I got shots for it, and I'm glad that I did. People who have contact with children ought to be in the know about making sure that they're up to date on their measles vaccines. Seems like that's more important than ever right now with the cases popping up that have not been popping up for years and years and years.
Absolutely. I would say to that person, thank you for being a good citizen, because that's what we're doing. We're creating a safety net for our communities when we go ahead and get vaccines. And like they say, you know, it's making it safer for the people around you. So to bravo to them.
Here's Annette at 312-981-7200. You're on with Dr. Silver. Hi, Annette.
Hi, good morning, Dean. Good morning, doctor. My question is, I had shingles 5 years ago. I waited a year, my doctor told me. I got the shingles vaccine after that. And now I have shingles again.
Oh, boy.
The same area on the left side of my head and my face.
Mm. I've actually had...
Is this unusual?
I've had a couple of other people, Doc, on the text line saying, I've had the shingles vaccine, and I've had shingles multiple times. Different people, you know, saying different numbers of times. So is that uncommon that... people who get the vaccine go ahead and get shingles multiple times anyway?
No, it's not uncommon. I would say, first of all, to the caller, I'm so sorry. My heart goes out to you, and I hope it disappears quickly. The vaccines, of course, aren't perfect, but they do help prevent disease in many folks. And in other folks, they help attenuate disease. So whereas if you hadn't had the vaccine, you might be even sicker than you are. It can at least reduce the effects, reduce the length of illness, reduce the risk of hospitalization, reduce complications. So I'd like to think, of course, you never know in any one particular person, that it's helping to some degree. But in some cases, it just isn't enough.
Okay, I just have to wait it out.
Yeah. Typically, how long does this last, doctor, when... somebody gets shingles. I assume you're in kind of an uncomfortable state right now, Annette. How long
yes.
How long will this go for Annette and others who?
Well,
get shingles?
I got this like the first week in March.
Okay,
so it's still going on.
So you've had it for a while. Typically, how long does that last, doctor?
They usually, shingles won't last longer than a month, but in some cases it can, I've seen it go, you know, 8 weeks before, let's put it that way. Yeah. So not to make you feel even worse than you already do, but, you know, I hope that your doctor is on top of this and helping you with symptom control. And if not, you know, I would definitely want to get seen just to make sure that everything's going the way that it should be.
Yeah, Annette, good luck with all of that. And shingles is something that's inside of you anyway. It's not like you catch shingles from somebody. It's something that lays dormant in you that manifests itself, right?
Correct.
All right. So everybody be aware of all of that. Dr. Silver, always good to talk to you. Great info this week. We appreciate it. Dr. Jeremy Silver is the Director of Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Have a great Sunday today, doctor. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. Take care.
Want to hear a nice text to go along with this beautiful morning?
I would love
yes.
to hear a nice text.
Got this
text.
Beautiful morning, a nice text.
I would love to hear it.
From the 847 area code, Uncle Dean, I turn on the radio on Sunday morning just to hear your show.
Aww. How about that?
Very nice.
Thank you. Why are you laughing?
Well,
I mean, that's a very nice,
Way
to greet the morning.
Right. She turns the radio on just to hear the show, and then
they're talking about
different weird things.
Leftovers.
By the way, David Hochberg joins us in just a few minutes, by the way.
Oh, he does?
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know. We have a team of people in toxic waste suits who are cleaning out our lunchroom right now.
Hazmat suits.
I was going to say.
Right. They're in hazmat suits cleaning out the lunchroom from what David left out there yesterday. So we'll get into that in just a minute. Hey, you know what I wanted to mention?
What's that?
Our News Nation, our national news channel that we
yes,
have.
Yes, sure.
Maybe you've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
They were featured on the final episode of Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm last Sunday.
Oh, really?
As a clip, something that, you know, that Larry was involved in. It was the ongoing kind of storyline through the last season, but they had reports of, like, News Nation reporting on what was going on with Larry David, which I thought was something.
Very cool.
And then last night on Saturday Night Live, they were doing a segment, you know, like a joke segment of somebody being interviewed about AI on News Nation.
Okay.
So another News Nation mention.
Very cool. All right. Great.
Yeah. So there you go.
Okay.
You don't seem that excited.
No, I'm fine with that. I think it's fine.
I think it's fine.
Yeah, Shawnee, we're going to have to see you in the personnel office right after that. Just like sitting back listening to my old A-track of the Tapestry album. The great music of Carole King, her music coming to life on stage at the Paramount Theater in downtown Aurora. Their latest production there is beautiful, the Carole King musical. And we're going to be doing another one of our Dean's Night Out on Sunday, May the 12th. Sunday, May the 12th is the date for that. We'll get together, a little pre-show reception, and then go into the gorgeous Paramount Theater and enjoy the show. I've seen a beautiful The Carole King musical a couple of times. It's an amazing show, Tony Award-winning show. I forget how many Tony Awards that the show has won, but it's multiple. And it's fantastic because it's the music of Carole King. It's music that she wrote for other artists in her early career. And it's all performed beautifully. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the show. Shawnee, you know that she...
It's a great show.
Yeah, she wrote songs for many other artists before she ever stepped in front of a microphone.
Yeah, years, like 20 years before she did. Yeah. Well, 15, I guess, but...
pretty long time.
You know, when Tapestry came out, I thought she was a new, young singer that was a rising star. Yeah. I had no idea that she wrote many of the pop classics that came 15 years before that album.
The Drifters, Up on the Roof, the Shirelles, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow. Did she write Be My Baby?
Yes, I think she wrote Be My Baby and One Fine Day.
One Fine Day, you look at me and you will know.
She wrote anything for Dexy's Midnight Runners?
The Night Chicago Died? Was that hers?
No, she didn't write that one.
The Night Chicago Died. People love when we sing on the show.
Brother, what a night it was. Brother, what a night it was.
We do get a lot of...
We
get a lot of response.
Not all positive.
No, none of it, actually. Not one of.
Not my wife texting again.
Not one bit of it. But it amuses me. Actually, we had somebody in the last half hour that texted in. Enjoy the show. I appreciate it. I really, you people are way nicer than we deserve.
Boy, you said it
on the show. I swear it's true. But, people say how much they laugh and they enjoy the show. And someone said they enjoy when I do my juvenile Dean voice.
Oh, I love the juvenile voice.
Oh, Dave, what's a record? People enjoy my little character.
Oh, man. So, what's a 45?
What's a 45? I don't know what you mean. How can I go see that Carole King show, Uncle Dean? What's her name, Carole King? It's going to be May the 12th, and the way that you can win tickets to join me is by going to WGNradio.com/contests, WGNradio.com/contests, and you can win a pair of tickets to join me for the pre-show reception and also to see what I'm sure is going to be an amazing production of the show. It was a Sunday morning like any other. Maybe even more exceptional than most. A gorgeous, sunny day. Everyone was in a great mood at WGN Radio as the Sunday morning show was about to begin. And then I stepped into the WGN lunchroom where I was confronted with the biggest pan of paella, half eaten, that had been left out for in excess of 24 hours, smelling even worse than it looked. Where did the paella come from? It wasn't hard to figure out. There was a note right next to it that said, "Clean up the pan and put the pan on my desk. Signed, David Hochberg," who joins us on the phone Shawnee, am I being overly dramatic?
You just described everything that happened.
Yeah, exactly. David Hochberg, David Hochberg, who hosts Home Sweet Home Chicago Saturdays from 10 to 1 here on WGN, and apparently thinks we're his butlers to clean up his mess. Hi, David.
Hi, Dean. First of all, my phone, I've exceeded my minutes for my digital, because I've been receiving text messages from all over the world. Dean Richards is so upset with you.
That's right.
You are in trouble. I'm like, okay, well, there goes my digital time.
That is accurate. You deserve it.
I've got to re-up. And, you know, officially, Shawnee, it's only been, and Dean, it's only been 22 hours. So I just want to officially do that. So my friend...
So you're 22 only, and my, a half my, yeah, now.
So apparently you'll only get mild diarrhea if you...
Well, here, my friend, my good friend, Greg Gardbeau, who him and his wife, Christina, own Chicago Culinary Kitchen. He's brought food in for our team a number of different times because he likes to promote different things. I love supporting local businesses.
Here's the double plug. He got the plug yesterday. He's getting another one.
I got the plug in.
Yeah.
I got the plug in. So he called me up because he wanted to start this line of paella. So he went to Spain for a week with his wife to learn how to make it. He went to Texas for another week to deep dive to learn how to make it. And he was very proud of it. And he wanted to bring it down. So I'm like, okay, as I was brought up, Dean, as you were brought up and Andy was brought up, because I grew up with Andy in the same neighborhood.
Oh.
You don't bring in just food for your team.
Right.
You bring in food to feed everyone.
Right.
Right. That's what my good Jewish mother taught me.
You know what else I was growing up with? That if you make a mess,
here we go.
You clean it up.
Okay.
That's what I also grew up with.
Noted. It was so good. There was, you know, the news team changed out at noon.
Oh, yeah. There's a half a pan still there. I put a picture of it on my Facebook. So if anybody wants to see what I was confronted with this morning.
At least put the picture up that Patrick's got of the before.
That's irrelevant, what it looked like before.
It was delicious.
I'm sure at one time back in the Eisenhower administration, it was very delicious.
Come on.
Now we just wanted to give you a little ribbing here for leaving it out because, what I've been inundated with texts are people going, that happens in our work kitchen all the time. People leave stuff out on the counter, in the refrigerator. They leave disgusting food out all the time and expect somebody else to clean it up. That's what I've been getting a lot of. So,
well, duly noted. I apologize.
Have your little restaurant pal come and pick up his pan. We're not cleaning it up.
No. I'll take care of it. I promise. And I promise when I leave at 1:05 on Saturdays, there will not be a drop of food left. I will take it all with me and give it to the security folks downstairs. Okay? In the future.
Andy, are the hazmat people still in lunch right now?
Yeah, they are.
We've actually had to, put like plastic up on the walls.
No. But it was delicious.
I heard
delicious.
A buzzer go off about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah. Shawnee,
this is why we can't have nice things, right? Because I was trying to do a nice thing to share a delicious meal with everybody, and I should have just taken the pan downstairs and fed the entire security staff, which I will do in the future because I don't want to be penalized for not bringing in food now. I don't want Mary to yell at me for bringing in food. I promise to clean it up, and I will feed the security people. I won't take care of anybody at WG, and after I leave at 1:05, eat what you want to eat at 1:05.
Are the security people going to have to clean up now after this?
No. I asked Patrick to please just rinse it off, put it in my office, and I will take it back to Greg next weekend.
Okay, so Patrick.
To Patrick agreed.
Producer Patrick, who's filling in for Jack today, you're in charge of the cleanup. Is that lucky you?
He's a nice guy. He does a tremendous job. Jack does a great job, and so does Patrick.
All right, Shawnee, did you have any of that yesterday?
I was ready to. I was leaving actually when they were coming in, and I was going to meet a friend for lunch. So
You took a pass on it.
I didn't have any.
Now I've known Shawnee a long time. He'll pretty much eat anything.
There's no doubt.
But you did not have any of
I didn't have any yesterday, no.
Rabbit paella here.
Was it rabbit?
Just to make it even more appetizing sounding.
Yeah, it was rabbit, and he had smoked delicious mushrooms, and he had edible flowers and these beautiful red peppers. Dean, you would have loved he'll bring in a much smaller one you and take it out if you want.
I don't see here's the thing I've learned in my 30 years plus here on WGN. I don't allow food on the show.
Oh, really?
Right, Shawnee?
He's a stickler about that.
I have a no food policy on the show.
Why?
Because there's nothing more boring than listening to someone on the radio eating food.
Talking about how great it is and promoting their business.
Yeah, but here's what you hear on the radio. This is good. We just don't do that. Everybody can do whatever they like. You know, I've listened to your show. It's very entertaining.
Thank you.
Clean up after yourself. That's all.
Done. Noted. And
Shawnee, you got any bones to pick with him? You got anything you want?
You have covered the waterfront.
Andy, you've known apparently a long time. And you got any bones to pick? Did he do anything annoying in high school that you want to off your chest? Anything?
No. You could ask our Spanish teacher. Maybe she might have something else to say about that. But
speaking of paella,
it all comes back. It all comes back. Okay, I see.
So you read to Manias. She didn't like me at all. Manias. Yeah, she. I used to borrow the quiz before the quiz was taken, and she caught me once checking on the answers. The Statute of Limitations has expired, by the way, Dean.
I guess that's okay.
You can't call up Manny's High School and bully.
All right.
She caught me.
I guess that's
caught me. She wasn't too happy.
David Hochberg's Home Sweet Home Chicago and Food Emporium is Saturdays from 10 to 1. David, thanks, man. Enjoy your Sunday today. Appreciate you being a good sport about this.
No problem. Can you ask your listeners to stop texting me? Because it's literally, I got the point.
Don't stop, everybody. Keep it up.
Why don't you bring in some food? You're the one that cooks all the time.
For one thing, it's Sunday morning. What am I supposed to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and cook for you people?
I'm here at 4 a.m.
But I'll tell you what, if I did bring food in,
I wouldn't get any.
I'd clean it up afterwards. I cook every week at WGN TV.
And you clean up the kitchen there?
Every Wednesday, I cook. The crew eats like crazy. Larry Potash is the first one in line with a plate. Not complaining. He likes my cooking. Larry likes my cooking. Robin's the next. Paul Conrad. They all enjoy my cooking. The staff, people from around the building that I didn't even know worked at WGN, they show up on Wednesday to have the food that I make. And you know what? When it's over with, it looks like a war took place, you know, because there's the plates and dishes.
Silverware
and
all over the place. Yeah.
It's everywhere. Guess who cleans it up afterwards?
You.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Fine. I think it's fine.
I have a strict leave it the way you found it policy. If it's nice and clean when you start there, that's the way it should be when you leave.
Clean up after yourself.
Clean up after yourself.
I agree.
I think we actually have a note in our kitchen that David Hochberg ignored that says, your mother doesn't work here.
No, this one says we lost our maid.
We lost our maid.
We lost the maid.
It's a variation your mother doesn't work here anymore. Mm-hmm. Just clean up. That's all. Not asking for any big deal. I just don't want to see vultures flying over the counters.
you know what? Seriously, speaking of cooking, with the weather we're having, grill time.
I might
chicken and some veggies on the grill.
I might have to do a little salmon on the grill today. I saw a recipe yesterday on one of the cooking shows. I forget which one. Salmon piccata.
Oh.
Doesn't that sound good?
Oh, it sure does.
It's like piccata is like, you know.
Like a veal piccata, only with
like
the salmon.
Veal piccata with salmon. Yeah. A lemon and white wine and capers.
Lovely.
On salmon?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to try it that way on the grill.
Oh, all right. And then invite us over, right? You're going to have us all over.
And then I clean up.
Well, you're not going to have make us clean up while you sit and watch us.
I sent a text to David Hochberg that he could come to my house.
Come over and clean.
He owes us a couple of cleanup jobs.
Are you a clean as you cook kind of person?
Yes.
Okay. My wife is too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So you
that's a good way to do it.
So you have less to deal with after you're done.
It's overwhelming. Yeah. If you have dirty dishes and pans and stuff all over the place, it's overwhelming. So I do try to, you know, keep up with it that way. Hey, speaking of cooking, on a serious note, I wanted to mention that I was very sad to hear the news of the death of Chef Hans.
Oh, man.
Hans Aschenbacher, very, very, very well known in Chicago, the executive chef at the Chicago Stadium and then at the United Center. Back in the day, he cooked for the Bulls and the Blackhawks. Players and their families just loved them. He went to Smith and Wolinski. After that, he was a mainstay on TV and radio stations all over Chicago with Chicago Cut Steakhouse. And he passed away the other day at the age of 80. Maybe not a bigger heart than anyone in Chicago. Just famous for fundraisers and charities and nonprofit organizations. Andy, you know, because he was so involved with so many sports personalities.
Yeah, we used to have these dinners every once in a while between all the folks that worked at the various radio stations that were sportscasters and sports reporters.
Yeah.
And we'd end up going wherever he was because he would take such good care of us with a room on our own. And you know, he'd like to buy us drinks and course, we'd reciprocate when we could because he was always the guy that was trying to make you feel good about yourself right. And feel happy. And
was the ultimate host.
Yeah, he was great. Such a nice man.
Ultimate host. I mean, I was involved in so many charities with him over the years. I loved going to whatever restaurant that he was involved in because the food was fantastic. Not for free food, like
no.
Some people, like to do. You know, I always like to pay my own way. But he would, you know, bring a little appetizer or something and say, hey, try this. This is something brand new. So, but the thing I will always remember about Chef Hans, such a sweet and caring and giving person, selfless. He was completely selfless. So our condolences to his family. He was 80 years old. Sorry to hear that sad news. Let's get into our Week in Theater segment. Nice to say hello once again to David Foster.
I spent probably a month and a half there off and on, which was great. I loved it. And you and I we hung out a little bit while I was there, and it was great. And you being the theater expert that you are, it was like nice to have somebody that I could talk to about that.
Well, I don't know about the expert part of it, but I know that you gave us a pretty good show with the Betty Boop musical that I want to talk about in just a minute. Catherine, how are you?
Good. Thank you. Thanks, Dean.
Yeah, it's nice to see you both, and good to hear that you're going to be in the Chicago area at Hard Rock Live in Gary, Indiana, May 4th. I don't know if you know this, but this Hard Rock Live is walking distance from where Michael Jackson and the whole Jackson family grew up in Gary, Indiana. Their house is designated as a historical landmark there. What will you both be bringing to this intimate evening with both of you at Hard Rock Live?
Each other.
Aw.
Yeah. We have a lot of fun on stage. We tell our story and through our music, and we do songs for Cat, from Smash and from Waitress and from our American Idol days. And then my catalog, which is pretty lengthy, and we stumble through some of those, and we go to the audience to get people to sing, which I love to do. So if you're a singer, come on down, because you might get picked, and who knows, you could get discovered. It hasn't happened yet, but it could.
A lot of people ask, like, oh, how do you pick the songs? What's your song process or song choice process? And it's a lot easier than you would think. I mean, there is a long, though actually the hardest part is feeling like there's so many great songs that David wrote and or produced. And it's like, you know, hard that you only have like, you know, 90 plus minutes to get it all in. But really, like, we talk about how we met, how we ended up on a stage together. And basically the song sort of just lead from the storytelling. So
Actually,
or follow from the storytelling.
Yeah, and on one of our tours, I don't know, it was maybe 3, 4, 6 months ago, I noticed near the end of the tour, I said, we're not doing any songs from The Bodyguard. We're not doing I Have Nothing, to You, or I Will Always Love You. But we dropped them for a while. I don't even know why. They just disappeared. I said, we should put those songs back in because it's a pretty important part of my life. So now we sort of dabble at the Bodyguard stuff.
I would think that it's incredibly challenging to figure out, you know, which of your songs to include, because there, as Catherine said, there's so many of them. It's almost impossible to include everything. So you have to rotate it, I would think. Maybe that keeps it fresh for you in a way that you're changing up the show, so you stay kind of fresh with it.
Yeah, and we discover sort of new ways of storytelling as well. Like we've been
which leads to a song sometimes.
Which leads to a song, yeah.
Like just recently we put in a medley of Kat's stuff, some songs from Smash. We weren't doing it. We were doing sort of a little small bit of one song. Now we're doing a full, like, 4 minutes of two songs from Smash, which are Let Me Be Your Star and Please Forget Me.
Don't Forget Me.
Don't Forget Me. And it's great. And we just recently added that, and it's fun. I also like to keep in mind the band, too, because we have this incredible band of Bo Cooper, Keith Nelson, and J.R. Robinson, just three incredible musicians. And, you know, I always think in my mind, wow, they'd probably like to play something different tonight, because rather than the same old songs every night, you know.
So if it's not going to spoil anything from the live show, how did you both meet? I don't think I've ever heard this story.
Well, it will spoil a little bit from the live show, but we'll tell it maybe animated when hopefully people will come see the show. But I was a contestant on American Idol season 5, and David and Andrea Bocelli were guest mentors. We had an amazing season of, like, incredible guest mentors. It was like Stevie Wonder and
Barry Manilow
and Rod Stewart and Andrea. I mean, you could imagine me calling my mom every week and saying, you're never going to believe who's the guest mentor this week. Like, it just kept getting better and better and better. I was prepared to sing the prayer by Andrea Bocelli that David wrote for Celine Dion and Andrea. And
with Carol Bearsinger.
I sang his song that week on the show. And so we, you know, obviously all these things, you can see how it would lead into a song. That's how we met.
And then we worked for years afterwards together, doing charities.
He produced my first single when I came off the show.
We're talking almost 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the important thing to say, too, is that, like, we've known each other for a long time, been friends for a long time. Our relationship, our romantic relationship, was a bit of a surprise. Well, to me, maybe not to you. I don't think our intention getting together was like, oh, we'll just make this a family affair. You know, like, we'll get on the road and start touring together. That was not in my mindset at all.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a nice basis for a relationship, right? That like you were friends first before anything else, and respected each other's talents and so forth. I think that's the best basis for any kind of relationship. Talking about some of these names, that you're mentioning during Idol, David, that's a drop in the bucket to the people that you have worked with and for whom you have written and produced songs through the years. Is it possible for you to have special moments, special songs, ones that are especially meaningful to you?
I could actually dot out my career in about 3 sentences, 8 events. And I know, of course, there was a lot more than that, but I would dot it out like this. Studio musician, Earth, Wind & Fire, Chicago, Natalie Cole, Celine Dion, Whitney Houston, then Michael Bublé, Josh Groban, and Andrea Bocelli. That's a fast, that was actually only one sentence. Yeah.
Well, there's so many, but yeah.
Yeah. But those are highlights for me. Earth, Wind & Fire was so amazing. I learned so much from them, and I was so excited to work with them, and that was way, way back. And that propelled me into, like, this great career that I've had.
Earth, Wind, and Fire, interestingly that you said them and the group Chicago. They're touring again this summer, which is one of the greatest concerts I have ever heard, seeing them both together on the same stage in one night.
We only wish that we could have Peter Cetera and Bobby Lamb tour just one time, but Peter sadly is just, he's retired, living a great life in the mountains, and he just loves it.
You were here for the world premiere of the Betty Boop, the musical, a fantastic show, so fun. What's the latest on it? Is it going to be opening on Broadway? What can you tell us?
I tell you exactly. You know, I think we came into Chicago as a 7 out of 10, 1 out of 10, 1 to 10. I think we came in as a 7, and I think we left as an 8.5. And I think we've made it a 9 now. And our goal, obviously, is to get to 10. Just yesterday, I demoed, dragged my wife into the studio here at the house, and made it yet another demo of a new song for the opening of Act Two. Because what you saw and what everybody saw in Chicago, the opening of Act Two just wasn't working, and nobody liked it, and we, it really got up. It just wasn't good. So we finally, I wrote one about a month ago, and it got turned down by the powers that be. So I went back at it again with Jerry Mitchell's help and Susan Birkenhead, of course, the lyricist, and Bob Martin, and wrote one that they all love now. I just demoed it yesterday. We had our son like trying to get on the microphone as she was singing because we had no nanny.
No, he was great.
But we got it done. And we have another song I have to write too. And as you may or may not know or remember, I wrote a song during the run in Chicago for the male lead that slipped into the show, and a new ending. So it's a moving target. But yes, the short answer, we will be on Broadway in spring of 25.
Looking forward to that. And looking forward to you guys coming to Hard Rock Live. It's going to be May 4th in Gary, Indiana. Wonderful to see you. And I look forward to seeing you guys when you are back in town. It's always wonderful to talk to you. Thank you.
Likewise, Dean. Thanks for being so sharp. And you know everything, it seems. So we're going to stay close to you. Yeah, come on. Go on.
And I definitely will. I definitely just want to see the show. I've seen it on television, and I want to experience it live. But I appreciate it, and I appreciate that I've got you so fooled with knowing everything. Guys, have a great day today. Thank you so much. We get letters and emails and texts from people all over these great United States of ours, even internationally. The people listen on the web.
Mm-hmm.
This World Wide Web may catch on.
Got a chance.
Speaking of some nice texts, here's one. Let's see here. 815, Dean, thank you for hosting the cast members of the Choir of Man. That's the show that we had here a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
The nine guys of that amazing harmony. We went to last Thursday's matinee, and it was absolutely fabulous. I got an email telling us the show has been extended until July 14th. That is very true. And they say they're going to go see it again. Bill and Sue from Sandwich, Illinois. Good. I'm glad you enjoyed the show. It's, people are absolutely loving the show. Here is another. Let me see here. I've got to scroll down here a little bit. Dean, I wanted to share this with you. I got a transistor radio for my 65th birthday.
Oh, cool.
It's tuned to WGN. It's nice.
Locked on to 720.
Transistor.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have that under my pillow with a little earpiece when the Cubs were playing road games on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same. I used to listen to Dick Biondi.
Oh, yeah.
For me, it was Ron Riley and Art Roberts.
It's the Wild Australian. That's nice. Transistor radio. Let me see here. Dean from the 815 area code. Dean, I so enjoy your Sunday morning show. I plan my Sunday mornings around you and your family.
Wow.
I guess you guys family. Are my family.
Nice.
We are that dysfunctional, aren't we?
Very much so.
It's very true. Can you give me some info on the Golden Girls play? It looks like something to laugh your troubles away. It's a spoof of the Golden Girls that's coming to downtown Chicago. I hear it's very funny. I'm a huge Golden Girls TV show fan, but I've never seen one of these spoof plays, but I'm sure that it's very funny. I'm going to go and see it as well. But it says here, again, please keep going on Sunday mornings. You all sound like you're having a great time with each other.
And we are. This is fun to do.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Now, we have
if Shawnee takes his medication, it is.
We have an update, by the way.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. This is breaking news.
Andy was the one that is, I think, entitled to break the story here.
Well, I walked to refill my coffee, which is in that same particular room where the dish in question was.
The Great Paella Disaster of 2024?
Correct. The pan is now spotless.
Oh.
There is no more traces of paella in the kitchen.
I wasn't going to bring it up again, but as long as you have.
Yes.
I got a text. I was just going to drop it. But Engineer Bob Ferguson sent me a text saying, after sitting there for almost a day, there's this giant pan of paella that's been sitting in our lunchroom for just about 24 hours. After sitting there for almost a day, our maintenance man, Fernando, who normally comes in on Sunday morning anyway, you know, just to clean up a little bit, he dumped it and took it to rinse it out in the building's utility sink.
Oh, man.
Before and after, and he sent me pictures of Fernando with the spotless paella pan. So, you know, thank you.
Way to go, Fernando.
It really looks great.
The pan's still there?
Yeah, it's resting up against the counter.
And the spatula's clean also.
Yep. I may take those home. Teach him a lesson. I got a card this week also.
You'll have to put that pan in your trunk. It's huge.
I know. I may have to rent a U-Haul for it.
Mm-hmm.
It is gigantic. Enough about the paella, though. I got an actual card somebody sent me. Shawnee, this is from your old neck of the woods, from St. John, Indiana.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Just south of my hometown.
Ivy McMurtry sent a card with a little Indiana license plate, you know, a little plastic one with, you can buy those things with the mm-hmm. names on them. And what have I always said? I've never, ever seen one that said Dean on it.
Yep. Yeah, I'm very surprised at that, too.
Ivy sent me an Indiana, it's a little plastic Indiana license plate.
With Dean on it.
And it says, I heard you could never get one of these. Sorry that it's Indiana, not Illinois, but you can bring it with you when you go get your fireworks and smokes. Really enjoy listening to you on Sunday morning.
That's great. That is very thoughtful.
What a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous Sunday morning. Just makes you feel good. Hope you can enjoy as much outdoor time as possible today. Shawnee, I have a movie I want you to go see. I think you'll really enjoy this because you like movies that are kind of based in history.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Factually based,
yep.
What ifs, based on, real life situations, especially political. There is a new movie out this past weekend that will, by the way, become the number one movie of the weekend. The box office numbers have been huge for this movie called Civil War. Have you heard about it?
I've heard about it, yes.
It is stunning. Stunning. I gave it a Dean's List A. It is the story of a second American Civil War. Very poignant with the divisions that we have in America right now. How, two sides, look at the same problems with completely different conclusions. And, back in the old days, Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, who couldn't be more different, were able to sit down and negotiate and, come to agreements and so forth. That doesn't just seem possible anymore, to where it gets kind of ugly. The disagreements get kind of ugly. And this movie, the movie begins, and there is a civil war that's going on. 19 states have seceded from the Union. Florida has completely gone off and started its own country. Texas and California are what are now called the Western Front, and they are fighting against what traditionally would be the United States. There is, violence and fighting and explosions and some of the most disturbing scenes in this movie. It's not an easy movie to watch, I'll tell you that much. And at times reminded me of Saving Private Ryan. Remember how violent that was and just how...
Does it get that graphic?
Sometimes it does.
Yeah?
Yeah, sometimes it does. But some of the most disturbing parts of this film are seeing the two sides of this new civil war battling with and seeing the Lincoln Memorial being blown up, seeing national monuments in Washington D.C. as the backdrops for this incredible violence. I mean, we've seen plenty of war movies in the past. We've seen this kind of fighting, and it's always right someplace else, not here on U.S. soil. And this one puts the story right here on U.S. soil. It follows four journalists who are traveling to what is left of Washington, D.C., and what they encounter and what they see along the way is just extremely disturbing, because it's sort of a what could happen in the U.S., if we can't start talking to each other, instead of constantly fighting with each other and violence against each other, it's sort of a what-if, warning. And interestingly, it is not a political movie. You can't really watch this movie and say it's...
taking sides one way or another.
Yeah, it's not stacked to the left nor to the right. It doesn't really say how everything got started. It doesn't really pass a judgment of who's right and who's wrong. You're not entirely sure. In most cases, you're not entirely sure what side the violence is coming from or to. I think it's just beautifully put together. This movie is beautifully put together, but it's a little disturbing. So I gotta say it's a little disturbing, but I think must watch viewing if you care about America, if you care about the future and things that are happening in this country. I think this is a very interesting movie to see.
Now, who is in it again?
Kirsten Dunst,
okay,
is one of the journalists. I wish I had the full list of the cast here in front of me, but she's the biggest name in this movie. She's one of the photojournalists that are traveling in this beat-up old SUV to get from one part of the country to another as America's being ripped apart by Civil War. So it's called Civil War. It's just a little bit longer than 2 hours. But I think really worth it. It's an important movie to check out. Has anybody seen the movie? I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's as I say, it was hard to watch, difficult to watch. But when the movie was over, I just sat there. The credits are rolling. The credits ended. I'm sitting in the theater alone, just thinking about what I just saw. It just kind of like hit me in the head with a sledgehammer. I wonder how others, if some of the rest of you have gone to see this movie, what you thought of it. I would love to get your thoughts and comments and reviews. I gave A Dean's List A. I said visually stunning performances through the roof. Really, really powerful performances in this movie. Yet, it's not a feel-good movie. I mean, don't go to this movie thinking, boy, I'm going to go and, I want to get uplifted. It's, if anything, it might bring you down, but it is a powerful look at what if the divisions in this country lead us to a second civil war. Really, that's what an actual second civil war here in the United States. What do some of you think of it is what I would like to know. 312-981-7200. One reviewer saying, very impressed with Civil War. It smartly doesn't pick a side, leading to a film that focuses on the journalists in the movie. Those are the central characters, and their eagerness to capture the battlefield, capture the images from the battlefield. They're photojournalists, for the most part. Another, there are haunting moments in this movie. The performances are strong. Civil War is truly thought-provoking. Here's another that says, Civil War worked for me. I was nervous about the entire runtime. I thought it was a good runtime. It was just a little bit over 2 hours, not excessively long. But here's someone saying they were nervous about the runtime. A masterclass in tension and haunting sound design. Yeah, that's, I'm telling you, the filmmaking on this movie visually and the sound design on it, you know, just like builds the emotions throughout. Here's another saying, smart move to keep it apolitical. Keep it apolitical. I thought that was very interesting also. When I saw the movie, I thought for sure it's going to take one side or the other. You know, that one side started the Civil War, one side is blamed for starting the Civil War. It does not. It, you know, you may come out with a conclusion based on your own feelings, but the movie doesn't lead you in that direction. The movie keeps it right down the middle, which I thought was interesting. Here's one that says, Civil War weaponizes the audience's politics by throwing us into the middle of a contextless war. We're forced to provide our own context and put our own reality onto what the movie is presenting. Well, that's that is sort of true. It does kind of force you to, you know, make up your own mind. You don't know how the war started, really, the Civil War started in this movie, except that I guess you just assume because we have so much division in America right now that it was a result of the growing disagreement and just, you know, outright nastiness that both sides have for each other right now, that this, you know, must have been inevitable. But the movie does not, it is, in that sense, it is, there is no context for it. It doesn't force you to, you know, to think that. Here is another that says that Kaylee Spiani is a superstar. She plays a teenager who wants to be a photojournalist, who joins this group of photojournalists, veteran photojournalists, in this car ride across the U.S. that is embattled. And she is quite great. She is amazing in this movie, as is Kirsten Dunst. Stephen McKinley Henderson is fantastic in the movie as well. Here is another saying, very much in the pro-Civil War camp. There is no clear-cut ideology for the central conflict in this movie, but the movie itself has a clear-cut ideology, which is what matters. Some very interesting thoughts, I think, on this movie. It is extremely thought-provoking, and I think that's what makes a great movie. That's what makes a great play. That's what makes great artistic performance, when it can leave you, you know, thinking and pondering the message that they just put out there. I think it's job well done. So for what it's worth, Dean's List A for me for the movie Civil War. We're just talking about the brand new movie Civil War that opened in theaters on Friday. It is going to be the number one movie of the weekend. The box office numbers are coming through. They, you know, figure out, I don't know how they know exactly, but they estimate, you know, what the figures are going to be for Sunday. And the determination is that Civil War will take in $25.7 million over the weekend. A lot of people, by the way, just speaking of this before I move on, saying that they saw the movie, that they've already seen it. And here's one, saw it last Thursday night. As time goes by, we can see what we built for the last 250 years going in this direction. It's hard to believe America can be separated and so hateful. Very, 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 very interesting. And everybody who's commenting on this is commenting how apolitical this movie is, how it doesn't take a side one way or the other with this. So interesting that many of you have already gone to see the movie. Civil War, the number one movie of the weekend. And then after that, the number two movie at the box office, Godzilla Kong, The New Empire, $15 million. The Ghostbusters movie, Frozen Empire, came in at number three. Kung Fu Panda 4 is the number four movie of the week, and Dune Part 2 winds up being the number five movie at the weekend of the weekend. Coming up, we're going to be talking with two-time Oscar winner Michael Douglas, whose latest project is a limited television series that has just begun, in which he plays Benjamin Franklin, talking about America. And, you know, we hear so much about what did the founding fathers really intend for America. This is a look back at the earliest days of America, and when Benjamin Franklin is sent to France to enlist the help of France for this struggling new republic, you know, that's fighting for its independence against England. I've seen a couple of episodes, not the whole thing, but I think it's very interesting. And we talked with Michael Douglas about the whole thing and his career, and we'll get to that coming up in a couple of minutes. I also wanted to mention something that I'm going to be doing on May the 4th. I am flattered that I was invited to come to moderate the question and answer period for the event that will take place at the Chicago Theater. Phil Rosenthal was the executive producer of the show Everybody Loves Raymond. I knew him from back then when we used to go and interview them when Everybody Loves Raymond was on WGN. And we'd go and visited the set, and we've interviewed the cast several times, and Phil Rosenthal. Couldn't be a nicer guy. When Raymond ended, he started his own TV series in which he would go to different places and try different foods. It was kind of a travelogue culinary show that I was a big fan of, and now it's moved to Netflix. It's become so popular. Somebody Feed Phil is the name of the show, which is, I think, such a great show. He still does the same thing. He travels all over the place trying different foods and showing you different places. And he's got a brand new book out, and he is doing the special Night with Phil Rosenthal events around the country. He's going to be at the Chicago Theater on May the 4th, and I will be hosting the event, kind of helping to moderate the question and answer period with Phil. And I'm very much looking forward to that. I'm a big fan of the show and a big fan of Phil. And if you are as well, of cooking shows, travel shows, of his quirky, hilarious personality, I think this might be an evening that you would definitely enjoy. It's May the 4th, 7 o'clock. Yeah, 7 o'clock at the Chicago Theater downtown. Tickets are available through Ticketmaster and all the usual places, but hope you can join us for that very, very special night. I wonder if anyone ever called Benjamin Franklin Benny. Hey, Benny, what are you doing outside with that kite? Someday you'll be on the $100 bill. There is a new limited television series that has just dropped on Apple TV Plus that is about Benjamin Franklin, more specifically about a mission that he went on during the earliest days of America. The small group of United States were fighting for their independence from Britain, and they were seeking the assistance of France at the time. So they sent Benjamin Franklin to try to negotiate all of that. And it stars two-time Oscar winner Michael Douglas as Benjamin Franklin. And it's a very interesting look at Franklin the man, Franklin the politician, Franklin the diplomat. In these earliest days, it focuses very much on the earliest days of the United States of America. You know, we talk frequently these days about what did the founding fathers really intend when they wrote blah, blah, blah. Well, this in some ways, I mean, the movie is not about that, but it certainly refers to many of those things. And this TV miniseries digs into it. As I say, it's called Franklin. It's on Apple TV Plus. We've seen Michael Douglas in so many different kinds of roles. This one, as he told me in a Zoom chat, is a little bit different.
Michael, correct me. I've gone through your filmography. I don't think you've played an historic figure like this.
I've never. This is, part of my late go around. You know, I'd never really done comedy, so Kaminsky Method, never did green screen, so we tried the Ant-Man, and never did a period picture. So this was that. My legs are skinny, Dean. I don't look good in tights, you know?
I would have to disagree with you on that, well. I think plenty of people are looking at those gams. What made you decide to do this one? Is it the subject matter himself?
It was, it was somebody tells you to play Ben Franklin. You know, you start doing your homework and realize what an extraordinary person he was. I think we know a little bit about, you know, first of all, he left school when he was 12 years old. You know him as a printer, a writer, a publisher, starting universities and all of this, all his inventions. An incredible life. Then at 70 years old, the Continental Congress asks him, Declaration of Independence, to go over to France and get support because they were fighting the British at the time and they needed weapons and ships and money and everything else. And Franklin goes over at 70 with his grandson, Temple. And I was trying to think what 70 means in 1776, when the average age was 39, lifespan, 39. So that makes him a hell of a lot older than Joe Biden in terms of – and Joe Biden didn't have to take a ship for 60 days going across the water. And then this incredible intrigue of trying to get a monarchy to support this democracy and keep it alive. And bear no question about it. France is the reason that we are responsible. We exist as a country today.
Noah, what's it like for you to work with Michael? But going through your filmography, there's just nothing but A-list superstars that you've worked with pretty much since you've started. That's pretty remarkable.
Thank you. Michael's all right. It's really incredible. I'm very, very lucky, to work with the people I've worked with. And, you learn so much just from being around these people and seeing them kind of in their skin and how they hold themselves and how they balance their work and, you know, and, seeing, especially with Michael, I think Michael is one of the most professional and smart and hardworking people that I've ever worked with. And he is, he's incredibly, goes without saying he's incredibly talented, but just to see how professional he is, really was, it was a learning curve for me to see how much he just lights up a set and knows everyone's names and is polite. And right. I just, I hope one day I could be like that.
To a pretty good start with it.
I'll get you later.
Yeah, that's great. Michael, is there anybody on today's political scene who you would say is Ben Franklin-esque?
Oh, wow. I don't think, I wish there was. I really do. When you look back at Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and all of them, you know, this is when politicians were almost like the cleric. You know, they were public servants that gave themselves, in the act of supporting democracy, this phenomenal situation. And if one thing I think we got out of this show was just how fragile democracy is, you know, and how volatile, because everybody's got a vote, you know, so it doesn't work as cleanly as the autocratic systems. But, this was another chord that hit me about the show right now that rings true with this historical piece of just reminding everybody about the vulnerability of a democracy and how it's protected. It's an endangered species. There's more and more autocracies existing around the world. And I believe this is the most phenomenal system of governing that ever existed, and we all need to really support it.
There's Michael Douglas, two-time Oscar winner, our A-list interview this week, sponsored by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. The other voice that you heard, the young British actor who was with Michael, is Noah Jupe, J-U-P-E. May not recognize his name, but he's been in lots of movies with lots of super big A-listers. In addition to Michael Douglas in this movie, he plays Benjamin Franklin's grandson in this film. But he was in A Quiet Place with John Krasinski and Emily Blunt. You may have seen on Saturday Night Live last night. She was hilarious. He was in Ford versus Ferrari with Matt Damon and Christian Bale. He was in Suburbicon with George Clooney. I mean, the list of his filmography for this young man, he can't be 20 years old, is vast, and it's with one huge A-lister after another. This is his latest, Franklin, with Michael Douglas. That's on Apple TV Plus. It's streaming now on Apple TV Plus. A lot of people have asked since we shared the interview on television the other day, what is the status of Michael Douglas's health? Because he pretty publicly came out, 7-10 years ago, maybe something like that, and talked about how he had oral cancer. He had tongue cancer, and he did go through radiation. He did go through chemotherapy. It was stage 4 oral cancer that he went through, and the prognosis at the time of the diagnosis was not a good one, and went through all the treatment. I got to say that he looked terrific. I'm told, I didn't bring it up in the interview because I didn't want to focus on that, but I'm told that he is in remission, that the stage 4 cancer, he's constantly getting checked, and that he's doing okay. And apparently the treatments that he went through, the radiation and chemo, worked. Seems to be okay. His voice, I guess, is a little bit raspier than it was before. That's, I guess, to be expected if you're going to have radiation on your tongue and in that area of your mouth. I guess that is to be expected. But as we age, our voices get raspier. Our vocal cords are not the same as they were when we were younger. But overall, he sure seemed to be in the picture of health. When I talked with him on this Zoom chat, you'll see him in the movie, of course, in full makeup as Benjamin Franklin. But that's the latest on that. The cancer seems to be in remission. He seems to be doing real well. There is a special anniversary which will take place tomorrow, April 15th. Shwani, I know you're busy running a newsroom right now, but I think that you will find this especially interesting. April 15th, 1964, is when a woman by the name of Gail Wise went to Johnson Ford on Cicero Avenue. I don't remember Johnson Ford, but I do remember Cicero Avenue just being loaded with car dealerships. This was a Ford dealership. She went in with her dad, who has always drove Fords. And that's something how, you know, like some families, you stayed with whatever your family drove. Like my family was a Chevrolet family.
Right.
See the USA in your Chevrolet.
Yep.
We always had gigantic Chevys, and some families that had just drove Fords like Gail Wise's family did. So her dad took her to this Ford dealership on Cicero Avenue to buy a new car. And she bought a car that was about to be released like the day or two later. It wasn't officially released yet, but she bought the very first Ford Mustang 60 years ago tomorrow. Isn't that cool?
The very first one.
She still owns it.
Oh.
She still owns it.
There's a treasure.
She bought it for $3,447.50.
And this was the very first one off the assembly line, off the line?
That's what I read.
Wow.
If it was on the internet, it's got to be true. Yeah, that's apparently this is the real story. And she now lives in Park Ridge.
And she still has the car.
Still has the car.
In the garage.
I hope so.
I would hope, yes.
I would hope so. In you know, the urban madness that is Park Ridge, Illinois, you know, you don't want to just leave a car like that sitting out in no. place. You know, those ruffians coming out of the Pickwick Theater.
Ruffians.
Right. Yeah, she's married with plenty of kids now, and her husband says that we either have to get rid of it or rehab it. And they've decided to rehab the car.
That's
isn't that cool?
That's a great thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it's pretty cool. That was her first mm-hmm. car. I mean, she's had others since then, but that was her very first car, a 1964 Ford Mustang convertible.
Oh, wow.
How cool is that?
That is awesome. That's just great.
A Ford convertible.
Yep.
What was your first car?
Mine? A Plymouth Duster.
Fancy. Andy?
Andy?
A 1983 Chevy Citation.
Ooh. I remember those.
It's a tan bomber is what I like to call it.
Tan bomber.
Tan bomber.
Yeah, if you drove anything over 65 miles an hour, there was a rod that was in the trunk that began to hum.
Hmm.
So it's kind of like one of those little pre-warning systems, I think.
Yes.
One of the first ones
Don't
ever
go
created,
any faster.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Was your duster, Schwani, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Was that all tricked out?
No. It wasn't.
Do you have decals on the side?
It came with the car,
Flames.
A little Roadrunner decal. But,
yeah.
And maybe some sticker. Gold stripes, but that was about it.
Yeah.
Where was the I voted sticker?
Wasn't old enough to vote yet.
It was. He had a Nixon for president sticker on.
Well, it would have been about that time.
Right? I know. My first car was a 1968 Pontiac Tempest. Do you remember those cars?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
It was the coolest car.
Yeah.
Featured prominently in My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
The Tempest.
Yeah.
Now, was this the car where you had the CB radio in it?
Yes, it was.
And your friends were driving around?
We were driving
playing
around.
Playing radio in the car?
We were driving around like three idiots. This was like right when we all got our first cars, the three of us. And we all had CB radios in the car, and we would drive around just to talk to each other.
And what was your handle again?
The Golden Greek.
I was going to say.
Breaker. The Golden Greek. You got a, what did you say? You got a.
Breaker 1-9.
What was it with location? You got a.
What's your 20?
What's your 20? 10-20.
What's your 10-20?
Yeah, that's the Golden Greek. What's your 20? And then my friend Charlie, who was the Alaskan for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the Alaskan. I'm one block behind you.
Well, you could see each other in the mirror, right?
Three idiots driving around.
The first thing my dad ever let me ask on the CB radio was for a time check, and that was the old 1036.
Oh.
Someone gave
Oh, was that the 10 signal for the time check?
1036.
Okay. All right. Yeah, what's the 1036?
1223.
Why couldn't you just say what time is it?
Because it wouldn't be cool.
Yeah, it's like, what can you say? What's your location? Why do you have to say, what's your 20? We've had this conversation before.
Oh, we have, yes.
Do people still
And we had a lot of people that texted in and called about it, too.
I remember we had a lot of reaction, but I don't remember if people were reacting. Do they still have CBs in these days of cellular technology and mobile phones? Do people still have CBs?
They may.
I think truckers still use them, probably.
Truckers
yeah.
still use them?
All right.
Why wouldn't you just use your cell phone?
Yeah. My dad is into ham radio now, shortwave radio. Mm. And he has a couple of mobile ones that he can bring in the car. So when I go down there to drive them back from Florida, I get treated to some conversations from all over the country.
You get a little ham?
All over the country, yeah. Get a little bacon.
A little cider.
A little sizzle.
Ham.
A little pepperoni.
That was fun back then.
Yeah.
I had a giant whip antenna on the back of my
car. Yeah, I can see that with the big curve in it.
With the big spring on it, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't have one of those antennas sticking up on the roof.
It was like great when you go to like a parking deck.
Yeah.
And the clearance wasn't that good.
Yeah, it scraped on the...
And whipped back.
Idiots. We're such idiots. first car memories. Here's somebody else, Shwani. The Plymouth Duster was also my first car.
Mm-hmm.
It was bright green, so I could spot it a mile away.
That's important. Back before you had the little remotes on your keychain to find out where your car was.
Beep your car, exactly. 630 area code said my first car was a 1971 Pontiac Le Mans.
Wow.
That's fancy.
Yeah.
That was the step up from the Tempest.
Remember the GTOs?
Yeah. Well, wasn't that the Oldsmobile version?
That was a Pontiac.
Was it Pontiac GTO?
Yeah.
I guess it was. But I remember the Le Mans the Tempest was not like not the highest of the Tempest coupes, the Le Mans was. But it still was cool. The one that I had was still pretty cool. Here's one this is the one that said my first car was a 71 Le Mans, kind of muted metallic burnt orange with a beige vinyl top. Remember those vinyl tops?
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I think my Duster had a vinyl top.
Very cool, beautiful design, and it went fast. Yeah, I do remember that, too. I think like the first week that I got my driver's license, I also got a speeding ticket.
Oh, okay.
If I remember correctly. 81 Cutlass Supreme says,
nice.
My first car was an 81 Cutlass Supreme.
Nice car.
And I'm a girl, the text says.
Oh, that's a nice car. It's a great car.
Girls not have cool cars? Girls had cool cars.
Sure they
cars.
Do. Yes.
My first car was a Fiat X19. Against my dad's better judgment, he was right. Dads are always right. 76 Datsun B210. When's the last time you heard Datsun?
It's been a while.
It's been a while, yeah.
224 area code. Dean, we use the CB when we go into a gravel pit or asphalt plant.
Because your cell phone probably doesn't work.
I guess so. I don't get into enough asphalt plants.
Field trip.
Let's go ahead and do the show from. Let's do the show from an asphalt plant. Just so we can say that over and over again. Yeah,
boy. Echoing off the walls.
Oh my gosh! Look at this. The phones are going nuts with first cars. Dean, my first car was a horrible Chevy Monza.
Wow.
Do you remember that? Chevy Monza?
I remember Chevy Monzas. A neighbor had a Monza, yes.
I remember that.
And I had a neighbor across the street that had a Corvair.
I remember.
Remember that. The Corvairs?
My parents
Corvairs.
Had two of those.
Yeah.
Those were cool. Wasn't that the Ralph Nader car?
It was the
Corvair?
Yeah.
Well, it was the one that he ended up,
it was
discontinuing.
Putting the kibosh on, yeah.
You know, a car explodes a couple of times and people freak out.
Engine in the back?
My first car I sold to Victory Auto Wreckers.
Nice.
See, the old car was worth money.
It'd be worth money. I've told you a million times. Wow, look at, boy. What memories first cars bring, right?
Oh, yeah.
My first car was a 66 Navy Blue Chevy Impala. How cool is that?
Mm-hmm.
Mine was a 74 Dodge Dart that had been my grandparents' car.
I had a Dodge Dart after the Duster.
Wait a minute. There's more to the text. Wait a minute. It would have been my grandparents' car. My sister threw up in it.
Lovely.
Gorgeous day to be out on the grill. Food Time is on the air. Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The All Things Edible program heard every Sunday at this time. Yes, we're talking about grilling today. One, because it's a gorgeous day and we have to. But two, a special event is coming up for people who are interested in grilling and smoking and such at the Weber Grill Restaurant in Schaumburg. Who better to have on with us than Dustin Green, the director of the Grill Academy and head grill master for Weber Grill. Dustin, hello there, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great, Dean. How about yourself?
It's like the first time that I have you on, you know, for the season. It's like you emerge from hibernation. I know you're very busy during the winter months, but it's like my grilling people are out. They've come out of their cocoons.
Well, they tend to. As the weather gets nice, you get the folks that are like, oh, that weather, I'm going to stay inside. You know what? And it's great when the weather's great and people can get outside. And, you know, you appreciate the folks that want to get out there in the cold and keep it going as well.
Of course. Are you one of those? You've got to be one of those people that even if it's snowing and cold, you're outside doing some grilling. Or maybe not, because, I mean, that's your job. So maybe you do anything but grilling when you're at home.
You know what? It's 24/7 almost year round, and you know what, if I didn't enjoy and love what I do, I wouldn't be where I'm at and having as much fun as I do.
Yeah, that's got to be great. So I've already got people that are texting questions in for you about things that they want to do today, which we will get to in a couple of minutes. But I wanted to just start off talking about this master's class, this barbecue master's class that Weber is putting on. It's a two-day event at the Weber Grill Restaurant in Schaumburg. Explain what's going to be going on with this.
So this is just, it's a class that really takes the art of smoking and it breaks it down from a process standpoint, start to finish, of how do you set up your pit? How do I season my meat? What am I looking for when I'm choosing it? In troubleshooting your pit along the way of start to finish, of really just trying to help people get from point A to point B and really put a good, nice smoked, whether it's brisket or shoulder or ribs, and really just how to do that.
Now, you're going to be a part of this, of course, but it's sort of a who's who of grilling and smoking, who have people from around the country who are going to be participating in this, right?
It really is, and like I said, I'm fortunate to be able to do what I do, but I'm also very fortunate to have some great friends to be able to bring in as experts and really get, you know, people in front of them and to be able to ask questions and talk with. But we have Tuffy Stone. He's a 6-time barbecue world champion, was on a couple of the Food Network shows. We have Harry Sue, who was also on Barbecue Pitmaster Season 1. He was the champion. We have doctors and meat scientists from The Ohio State University, University of Illinois. We have a gentleman that's in the top 50, barbecue restaurants by Texas Monthly out of Houston, Texas, Russell Ragels. Really, it's just a conglomeration of people that are experts to really help people out with along the way.
What do these professors bring to the table? Just the science of smoking and grilling to best maximize the cooking process for whatever it is that you're doing on the grill?
A little bit of that, yes, but then also a little bit of, you know, when I'm walking into the grocery store, what am I looking for? You know, from marbling to grading to the quality of the meat to the coloration to, you know, not only that, but then, like, you know, where does the meat come from? And try to get people an understanding of not only, you know, why they're smoking it, but, you know, where does it start?
Interesting. Very interesting. I think this is going to be such an interesting event. It will be April 19th and 20th at the Weber Grill Restaurant out in Schaumburg. And let me just go through my notes here real quick. If people want to get more info on this, you go to WeberGrillRestaurant.com. Is that right?
Yes, sir. And when they do that, you know, with the Weber Grill, with the cooking school they have going on, there's a lot of great other classes that are out there, you know, for people to take, not only besides this, say, master level class, but, you know, there's steaks and seafood classes and really just anything that people are going to want to know how to grill. The Weber Grill Restaurant, the cooking school, does a phenomenal job of putting those out there for everybody.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the things that you're going to be talking about on this two-day seminar, really. Bourbon and beer pairing with things on the grill, accessories and knives, which is so important, mm-hmm. pork shoulders and ribs, brisket, anatomy. What's anatomy 101? What does that mean?
So we're going to talk the two doctors that we have coming in. One of them is going to talk about pork, and they're going to take part of a pig, and they're going to break it down a little bit to talk about the parts of it, and then talk about like Berkshire heritage breed pork, and then like a commodity pork. Talk about the differences of those. We're going to do a little bit of a tasting about those porks so people can see the difference, to understand what they're paying for versus what they're getting.
Wow.
And then similarly with beef, you know, we have a select, a choice, and a prime. And then the doctor for that specific area is going to talk about, you know, the differences within that meat and you know, what people are looking for, you know, within those quality grades. But then we're going to try them as well so people can really understand and not just hear about it, but they can taste it and see it and really kind of 360 it together to understand it.
Yeah, there are dinners and meals that go along with all of this. So it really looks, you know, if you're into grilling and smoking, this just seems like complete panacea. The science of brisket, pork ribs and shoulder, top barbecue accessories, pit setups, it's all here. And again, you want more info, go to WeberGrillRestaurant.com. We'll repeat all of that in just a couple of minutes. Are there certain things? I mean, it might be too late today to do, to smoke something, to do a pork shoulder or, you know, something like that, because that's low and slow. It takes a little bit of time. But certainly some ribs on the grill today. I mean, you could run out to the store right now, get some ribs and get those things on the grill for later on today. In fact, you know, I like to do my grocery shopping on Saturday mornings, early Saturday mornings. I notice so many stores that have like 2-for-1 full slab baby back ribs, things like that. Yep. I mean, is all that pretty much created equal if I'm in the store to pick up some baby back ribs, or are there certain things I should look for when I'm shopping?
You know, I always like to, there's certain things I like to look for, you know, and everybody's a little bit different, but you know, for me, I like to try to pick slabs that are about the same weight. You know, ideally, if they're about the same size, they're going to cook at about the same time. I do look at the color of the meat. I look a little bit at the marbling, that's the fat intertwined within the meat, to see what it looks like, to make sure it's nice, it's, you know, evenly distributed. And I do look kind of at the freshness of it to see what I'm working with. So just, you know, some simple things out there to look at to help people.
Okay, but I mean, that's all really good advice. But I mean, in terms of, are there certain kind of baby backs that are different than other kinds of baby backs? Or do you like beef ribs? You know, some of the, you know, like I call them Fred Flintstone ribs, the, you know, the gigantic ones that,
yeah,
that are out there. Do you have a preference one over the other?
You know, Mike, I'm a baby back person when it comes to pork ribs. My kids aren't real fond of spare ribs, even though I do kind of enjoy those a little bit more. I just know that my kids aren't going to eat them as well. A beef rib I love because it's very forgiving when you cook it. It's got great, you know, tenderness to it. Typically doesn't take as long as a brisket, but the process is very similar. But, you know, in my house, besides typically spare ribs, my kids will eat anything I smoke.
Yeah. What's the basic cooking process for those? I mean, when I've done ribs, I usually do like, you know, I spice it. I keep it on an indirect method. I don't put any sauce on it until the very end. Is there like a, you know, quick and easy techniques to doing ribs on the grill?
Sure. And you know what? You hit on a couple of them. You know, for me, I try to keep it simple. If I'm looking at about say a 3-pound slab of ribs, I'm going to run it what's called like a 2-2-1 method, where if I set my smoker up for low and slow, I'll run 2 hours of it unwrapped, like just sitting there letting the smoke attach to that meat, really penetrate, dry flavor.
Yeah.
Then I'll wrap them in an aluminum foil, which is, you know, a Texas crutch. I'll put a little bit of apple juice in there with it.
Mm.
I'll run about 2 hours on that. And when I say about 2 hours, what I'm looking for is a tenderness. I'm looking for a feeling. I'm looking for a nice pullback from the bones. You know, I want them to be about done, but not quite done, if that makes sense.
It does.
So,
and then I take
them out of that wrap and I dry them out and I sauce them, which is like the last like hour of the cook.
Right, right. Now, what different for, you're talking about smoking there. What about grilling? Any different?
When I'm grilling ribs, or
yeah, yes,
Well, yeah, I typically do it the same, you know, if I'm going to put them on a gas grill or a smoker or like even a charcoal grill. My process is really the same. The thing that changes is ultimately it's just how I'm going to get, how I'm going to set that grill up to get to the temperature that I want.
Okay. All right. And ideally, what do you check them with an instant read thermometer to tell when they're done, or do you just do that kind of eyeball it or with by feel?
I'll use like a, you know, a toothpick or a meat probe to kind of check them for the feeling that I'm looking for. The temperature, I mean, as you know, and you cook a lot, the temperature done this is going to be a range, usually just because all the meat is never, when you're smoking, it's the makeup of it is not always the same. So I'll use the temperature as a guide, but then the feeling is really what I'm looking for to drive me to say, okay, those are done. And with the rib, I'm looking at somewhere around like 190 to about 195 is where I'm looking for to start feeling them.
Okay. All right. Very good. I want to get to some questions that have been texted in. You can text in right now if you'd like or call 312-981-7200. Our Food Time segment sponsored by Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Dustin Green, the director of the Grill Academy and head grill master for Weber, on the line with us today to answer some of your questions. The 847 area code, Dustin, asking, I love doing halibut on the grill, but I always seem to dry it out. What's the best technique?
No, it's perfect. You know, and I would say right now, and one of our favorite things at Weber, and we've just, you know, started making some really great products, but I love the griddles when it comes to halibut and fish. And, you know, whether you're using like our slate or a full griddle inserts, you know, just to be able to put that, you know, straight onto the surface of it, little oil, salt and pepper, blackening seasoning, lemon pepper, whatever you're looking to do, a single flip. But, you know, for me, what's, it sounds like they dry it out. It's, you know, typically you're cooking it too long. You know, you want to pull it at about 135, 140 degrees and cook it through, but not dry it out. I would also question and say, too, is sometimes when people will buy a frozen fish, they don't thaw it properly. And that'll cause the fish to dry out because you're losing the water and the moisture in it if you're not taking care of it.
Yeah. Another question. How do I do bacon wrapped shrimp on the grill? And I would guess that the griddle is a great solution for that also.
It really is. You know, for me, with anything I typically bacon wrap, if it's a scallop or if it's a shrimp, I like to par cook the bacon a little bit, kind of start that fat rendering process, break it down.
Yeah.
You know, as you know, shrimp are small. They cook in 5 to 6 minutes. Scallops are the same. They cook in like 6 to 8 minutes. Well, bacon's going to, you know, from a raw state, it's going to take a little bit longer than that.
Right.
So you want to just kind of give it that little bit of a jump start.
That's a good idea. That's an excellent, excellent idea. The Schomburg Cooking Class, Barbecue Masters Class, is April 19th and 20th, the 2-day Barbecue Master Class. You can get more information when you go to WeberGrillRestaurant.com. Dustin Green, director of the Grill Academy and headmaster, the head of the grill master at Weber. Good to talk to you, Dustin, and we'll chat soon. Thank you.
Take care, Dean.
All right. Appreciate the call. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you tomorrow morning on Bob Surratt Show and Monday through Friday, and of course on WGN-TV Morning News. I hope you have a wonderful Sunday. Thanks for listening.